We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. Today, I give an extended talk on reincarnation. I'll tell you all about it. And we'll have musical interludes from a little-known blues musician named Washington Phillips, born in 1880, died in 1954, from his album Washington Phillips and His Mandarine Dreams. A mandarin is an instrument that he crafted. It looks a little like an auto harp without the keys. The son of freed slaves, Phillips would often lead the preaching and singing at the annual Juneteenth celebration in his hometown of Simsboro, Texas. You'll hear some very sweet, soulful music from a bygone era recorded in the 1920s. Stay tuned. Way. now for an explanation of reincarnation and associated matters so that these concepts have context. For me, Mystic Pete, a self-proclaimed mystic. Of course, you don't have to believe anything I'm about to describe, but you could have an open mind. I've remembered many of my past lives, and I've guided many others to remember theirs. These memories have an external quality that we tap into rather than merely feeling made up in our heads, and release enormous amounts of emotional energy, such as weeping upon the recalling. And these past life memories have a striking way of putting struggles in present-day life into perspective, often leading to aha moments, such as, so that's why I've always failed at love. But could all this otherworldly stuff simply be in our imagination? The skeptic in me likes to leave that possibility open a crack. Anyway, here we go. This is how I believe it's all put together. There's a unity of soul in the spiritual realm, with only a gossamer distinction between individual spirits. Let's call that realm heaven, the eternal, endless spiritual vastness filled with countless loving souls, where we exist before and after life on earth. In these spiritual dimensions, growth is eternally slow. A soul may find the amber of heaven lustrous and infinite, but because it's absolutely free and limitless, it may also immobilize. There's nothing to push against in heaven. And as the Talking Heads put it, heaven is a place where nothing ever happens. Although all is one in heaven, all is not one during our life on earth. In our world, someone might steal your food, or think you are food and steal you. To survive here, you have to work hard. The heavenly realm cannot challenge you in this way. This hard work strengthens you as an independent soul. As to why a spirit would seek to individuate in the first place, or why a spirit would want to come to earth to learn compassion when it's so perfectly compassionate already up in the heavenly realms, questions for another time. A soul develops individuality by braving each level of being the material world has to offer, as exemplified by the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms, by sequentially living in or moving up through these various tiers of consciousness. This is a journey of lessons. As soon as a soul learns about all the characteristics of one tier, for instance, how to be a wise and goodly crustacean, it graduates to the next. Spirits in heaven have no sense of separation. When a spirit first incarnates, it attaches to a piece of matter. Just being localized within a mineral and not fully merged with the One is a wild, crazy, and effortful experience. When you're a baby spirit, the cradle is rock. After a billion years of hanging around in the inert duality of molybdenum or marmalade, you finally comprehend the separation. I see. It's me in here, and there's that out there. It's not all one anymore. When the lessons of the mineral kingdom are learned, followed by a jaunt in the vegetable kingdom for an eon or two, the spirit will incarnate as a one-celled animal. Now it's endowed with a self-perpetuating mechanism, specifically eating and procreating. The big lesson a soul must learn at this juncture is how to transition from being a part of everlasting matter to an existence that begins and ends. This concept alone presents a spirit with enough challenges to fill a million-year self-improvement seminar, if only rocks could enroll. If a spirit incarnates as a protozoan, it learns to scamper away from danger, undulate cilia, and crack its whip-like tail. Protozoa may reproduce sexually, asexually, or in combination. Whoever would have thought that protozoa are hermaphrodites? They even have a hookup website, carbondating.com. After a million years or so of incarnating as a one-celled being, a spirit will have learned the lessons of existence as a rudimentary life form. Once it has experienced the life and times of an amoeba, it's ready to evolve into a multicellular creature. Then the real excitement begins as a jellyfish. After an age or two, it will move on to life as a fish and then an amphibian. Each phylum up the evolutionary ladder will hold not just new physical challenges, but we'll call it spiritual challenges. A multicellular life form is not just a creature, but also a type of consciousness that allows many individual units, cells, to work together for a common goal. In fish, we find a very mobile organism with corresponding mobility of awareness. Its flexible hinged skeleton is connected to a spine on the inside, an endoskeleton, allowing greater movement than the skeleton of a clam or shrimp, which is made of hard external bony plates, an exoskeleton. Heightened perception and a larger brain accompany a fish's maneuverability. That means that fish are more spiritual or have a more expanded consciousness than shrimp, although shrimp are hard to beat in a light butter and lemon sauce, unless we're talking about fillet of sole, not a shellfish bone in its body. Incarnation after incarnation, a soul will go through each phase of life at every evolutionary level. It gradually masters all the strata of consciousness that those life forms embody. Reincarnational ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. In each of these animal states, matters of faith or morality are not an issue because there is no capacity for such advanced comprehension. Fish don't worry about whether their lives have meaning or if they're praying enough. Angelfish accepted. A spirit simply experiences the entirety of a particular environment, which includes protecting itself, having sex, finding food, relating to others, and dying. It learns about each layer of consciousness in the animal kingdom as represented by the advancing intelligence of each animal classification. Each advance in genus encompasses a larger span of awareness. Alligators, reptiles, have a more advanced nervous system and a broader earthly experience than do, say, frogs, which are amphibians. Thus, one could say that a spirit that has lived as an alligator has a greater awareness than one that has only lived as a frog. But here's where things get a tad confusing. If you lick the skin of some frogs, you will have psychedelic visions of God. Licking an alligator is not recommended. Spirits continue moving up the tree of life until achieving warm-blooded mammalhood, wherein we find the genesis of the emotion of love. Spirits then have hundreds of mammalian lives, as cats, cows, shrews, armadillos, and, of course, hedgehogs, with lessons centered around devotion and fidelity to family and pack. Mammals have advanced lessons, too. There is actually a calendar with dogs doing yoga. The dogs may even be doing downward dog. Eventually, a soul will have monkey and other primate lives, with awareness expanding to include complex social systems, communication, cooperation, and hierarchy. Some people are sure they've had past lives as dolphins or whales, animals with very high consciousness, maybe higher than ours. I personally never want to incarnate as a cetacean. After being in water more than an hour, I get the shivers and start burping. And no one likes a burping dolphin. As we near life as a human being, we may have human-adjacent lives, perhaps as a farm animal or pet. When you treat animals humanely, you are blessed. You get karma from mistreating an animal, just as you do from mistreating a human. To clarify, it's one thing to kill a cockroach because it's a health hazard. But don't pull off its legs just to watch it suffer, unless you don't mind incarnating as a cockroach yourself, so you know how it feels. Humans are the final animal form. It's as close to being made in God's image as life on Earth is going to get. That doesn't make us superior to any of the other sacred beings who are not human. The next shape is angel, which is a transcendence of form. We likely start our human journey merely struggling to survive. An example might be someone scraping out a subsistence living, or someone who is a prisoner. Let me be quick to add that a prisoner or laborer might also be the incarnate of Buddha. To clarify this important point, it is not for us to assess the hierarchy of souls or how evolved someone is. One cannot ascribe spiritual maturity to occupation or wealth or any other aspect of life. A beggar living in a slum of Calcutta or a child imprisoned in a concentration camp could be an old soul who may be there to inspire others by confronting adversity with serenity. Conversely, the lowest level of human consciousness can come from privilege. Someone who has it easy, who doesn't have to work hard or develop empathy to prosper, may believe they are entitled to benefit at the expense of others. Arguably, the most repugnant chapter in the story of human evolution is the one about slavery. Civilizations on every continent, in Asia, Africa, the Americas, and Europe, have exploited slave labor. I'm going to briefly touch on some big and uncomfortable issues here. Slavery arose with the emergence of farming 12,000 years ago. Before agriculture, hunter-gatherers living nomadically didn't hoard items. They certainly didn't have slaves. There was small-scale intertribal fighting, but not war as we know it, because there were no stockpiles of items to fight over. Wherever a tribe went, there was usually plenty to eat. Why fight over supplies when more could be found an easy walk away? Why collect a surplus when it would just have to be transported from one place to another? Excess was a burden to migratory tribes. If a terrain ran low on things to eat, the band simply sauntered over to another area with low-hanging fruit. A couple hours later, a meal was ready. It made no sense to punish and supervise slaves to force them to gather sacks of white maggots, only to have to schlep the sacks of white maggots around. In hunter-gatherer societies, slavery had no economic benefit. Though you may be thinking, hold on a minute, white maggots are highly nutritious. Hunter-gatherers, known for their generosity, shared everything, including food, possessions, and sex partners. Their survival depended on this kind of camaraderie and collectivism. Children were raised communally. Every adult was the parent of every child, which could be rough on a teenage girl coming home late after a date with the dreamy guy with a bone through his nose. And there was no reason why a man would need to know who his specific offspring were, since children were raised communally, so everyone had multiple sex partners. Being stingy with one's genitals was considered inappropriate. With all the leisure time and sex and caring, the hunter-gatherer epoch of human history was a happy one, if you didn't mind the occasional headhunter trying to kill you and eat your brain. With agriculture and the abandonment of the nomadic lifestyle came surplus. In settled territories, food could be stored and used as currency to buy more territory. Armies were formed to protect possessions and to defend domains. Men had to be certain that when they died, their property only went to their direct progeny. Polygamy, one man with several wives, and monogamy, which controlled the sex lives of women, took root as a way to guarantee the identity of a child's father. No such measures were needed to determine the identity of a child's mother. When property was storable and owned by individuals instead of immediately consumed and communally shared, slavery had economic benefit. Free slave labor made the copious yields of cultivated crops like wheat, rice, rye, and barley even more profitable and generated more stuff to defend and fight over. Cities arose and surplus was amassed and traded for things one desired, like leisure time and sex partners and servants to indulge all of your whims. Civilizations grew from the bounty of slave-tilled land. Incidentally, it was at this time that the have and have-not wars began. the haves deposed the have-nots, spelling the end of Aboriginal Eden. Slave labor remained the engine of the tortured, fecund agricultural revolution until even more profitable means took over. Machines. One of the first was the cotton gin. Although slavery has little to do with the heavenly worlds where all is peace, love, and tofu, it's an unavoidable phase that humans move through as they evolve out of the animal world, as they evolve out of being beasts. Slavery ultimately teaches us the importance of free will and the importance of using it wisely. A spirit may start its enslavement odyssey as an enslaver who enjoys luxuries, leisure activities, prestige, and social standing. Days are spent partying, hunting, drinking, and carousing. The big problems that enslavers face are: people balk when asked to work for free. Humans object to being bred like animals. And parents put up a fuss when required to turn over their children to be sold as property. So, to reap the fruits of wealth, the bounty that comes from free labor, an enslaver must show terrible cruelty to his captives. The enslaved are routinely beaten, branded, maimed, tortured, raped, and killed. Because of the prodigious privilege slaveholding affords, those who can manage to be at the top can overlook its moral abomination. However, in the next incarnation, the enslaver's higher self directs its human lower self to become enslaved. The master becomes the servant, not as a punishment, but so the human can learn about the consequences of its actions and the pain its pleasure produced. A spirit may have a number of lives in the slavery cycle before it finally shakes its luminous head and says, "The privileges I enjoyed as a result of enslaving others are not worth the suffering I, or anyone for that matter, endure being enslaved. Slavery is wrong, and I'll have nothing more to do with it." This kind of powerful revelation and soul advancement is likely only gained from hard-lived experience. The slavery teaching is a gateway that each soul and that society collectively must pass through. You may even have the karmic remains of learning from both sides of the gruesome slavery lessons. Perhaps your neck pain is some residue from the life when you wore an iron collar. In the course of overcoming some of my own long-term physical pain, I remembered a past life being enslaved, which I'm about to relate. Actually, it's the final moments. After this memory surfaced and I sorted out its meaning, the pain went away. Why remember past lives? Sometimes it sheds light on and leads to resolution of present-day problems. White people have often been guilty of appropriating black culture. I certainly don't want to do that, particularly concerning the tragic subject of slavery. But I do have this memory of a past life as a slave. I hope my relating it doesn't sound tone deaf coming from a white man who, compared to many on planet Earth, lives a comfortable, if not privileged, life. This brief story suggests that we live life in different skin colors and different positions of power, and by the way, also different genders. And with that insight, hopefully, we'll have an additional incentive to treat all humans with great respect and care, because someday, he will be me. Also, this recounting can be heard as a warning to those with privilege who take advantage of others, perhaps in the most despicable way, by enslaving them. You too may someday endure the bitterness of subjugation. So be a decent person. I remember on the last day of that life, a rope was tied around my ankles and attached to the back of a flatbed wooden cart drawn by an Appaloosa. The driver cracked his whip, and the horse reared and bolted. I was yanked down the road for some distance, feet first. I recall trying to protect my head and torso while being dragged by pushing down on my forearms and elbows so they would absorb the impact of the jagged, grinding ground. When the cart stopped, I lay in the dirt, bloody and dying. Unexpectedly, I didn't feel any pain. More surprisingly, it was the happiest moment of my life. Shafts of afternoon sun streamed down through the red and yellow leaves. A silent breeze cooled my face. Everything was peaceful. As I took my last breaths of autumn air, I was filled with joy because the unspeakable misery of that life was finally over. People struggle with slavery issues in present day. They may not manifest literally with chains and bullwhips, but in modern-day scenarios, human trafficking, often for sex, is rampant. Millions of people still work in sweatshops. Economic bondage is widespread. One of my friends owes $50,000 to credit card companies, and you can bet that debt feels like it's locked around her neck like an iron collar. MasterCard is an unforgiving master. She was deliberately lured into this debt servitude by shady lending practices. If you own stock in a company that manipulates debtors, guess what you are? Don't be shocked to find yourself paying off this karma in servitude yourself. Ignorance is no excuse. Be careful where you invest your money. The same goes for buying products from companies that mistreat their workers. Well, everyone else does it. Don't be everyone else. Or else. Many of us work in jobs we despise or are locked in enslaving relationships. To be sure, actual slavery is worse than slaving away in a horrible office or being trapped in a toxic relationship. No one is tying you to a post and flogging you. But it still breaks your spirit to endure ill treatment from an abusive boss or partner. If you find yourself incarnated in incarceration, you must first determine if there's an important purpose for remaining there. Maybe you can help others from the inside. But confoundedly, even though the door is wide open for us to leave, we sometimes stay in virtual prisons. We just can't say goodbye. We choose the devil we know over the unfamiliarity of freedom, preferring break down to break up. Perhaps you make excuses for why you don't go. You'll leave after the kids move out, or after the next fight, or if just one more time he doesn't flush. While you may feel trapped in the prison of your life, there may be ways out of slavery when one is even literally locked in chains. Perhaps freedom can come through non-participation or civil disobedience. An extreme option is the Indian practice of dharna. A person fasts until they get justice or die. Gandhi and Cesar Chavez practiced a broad form of dharna. With sacrifice and diligence, you may find a way out. Where there's a free will, there's a way. To decline to participate in enslaving others in any form, and to decline to participate in your own enslavement, is to experience freedom. It's one of the highest attainments on earth. Spirits orbit through the incarnations from paired perspectives. One lifetime you're a boss, and the next you're an employee. One lifetime a man, the next a woman. A soul will have paired lives as criminal victim, teacher student, authority rebel, Giants fan, Patriots fan, until all facets of being human have been experienced, just the way all facets of one-celled life were experienced ages earlier. If you've lived thousands of lives, you must have done some heinous deeds. Any way in which you have taken advantage of others will be answered with an inverse incarnation where you are similarly victimized. This is not to punish you. It's to teach you. You must understand the pain you have caused. With this understanding, you will be helped towards the state of consciousness found in heaven, absolute compassion for all beings. You may prefer to go without that kind of help, but I can't help you with that. The angelic higher self, being purely compassionate, teaches the dullard lower self living on earth in flesh about compassion with lessons it can't ignore. Think of a puppet master, the angel part of you, using a sharp training implement on his stubborn, slow-witted marionette, the meat body part of you, in other words, you. The implement is suffering. From suffering comes understanding. Every few years, through war and genocide, whole populations endure massive violation and death inflicted with appalling ruthlessness. The people who participate in such carnage may number in the thousands or millions. In fact, it's such a common occurrence that if you've incarnated many times, you've likely taken part in such madness. You might say, we didn't know better. We did as we were told. Everyone else took part. As far as your higher self and karma are concerned, you are responsible for your actions, regardless of what anyone else does. If the event occurred in a prior lifetime, you are still accountable. If you've got such a specter in your past, and most of us do, it might explain troubles in this lifetime. I don't have a joke here. I never found Holocausts funny. If you want to know what kind of trouble you caused in your past lives, observe what kind of trouble has shown up in your present life. Though the suffering may not be overt, one of karma's most diabolical tricks is disregard. Your dreams and aspirations are ignored. Success passes you by. You grow old, and nobody notices you, and nobody cares. This karma is diabolical because there's no one to blame but yourself, or rather your past life self, which is hard to yell at, assuming past lives are real to begin with. Let's be clear about retribution from God. There is none. Karma is a different mechanism entirely. It's a choice people make to evolve by experiencing the consequences of their actions, not something inflicted by a vengeful God. Your higher self directs your lower self to learn from both sides. In one lifetime, you throw the pie. The next, you take the pie in the face. Anyone can enter the spiritual world at any time by killing himself. If you commit suicide, you still go to heaven. You won't go to hell because there's no such thing as hell, unless you consider life on earth as hell. Ending life prematurely is not evil, but it isn't really a prudent choice because you'll have to do it all over again. You'll come back to the same rotten childhood, leading up to the same anguished place you left off when you killed yourself, as if you left a karmic bookmark. What's more, you'll repeat puberty, acne, and the senior prom. Talk about suffering! For those with terminal illness, death with dignity is a whole different matter. Aside from dying, there are other ways to enter the spiritual realm. In fact, that's where we go each time we sleep. When we're snoozing, we flit off to spirit land on a dream vacation to relax, ogle some nymphs and satyrs, and shoot pool with the cherubs until we're ready to again face this cruel world upon waking. And through meditation, yoga, service to others, and other mystical practices, we can deliberately open this portal at will. Are there spirits who never choose to incarnate? Yes, far more than venture into our realm. A never-ending supply of spirits are waiting for a chance to play in the material world. Humans want to be angels, and wouldn't you know it, angels want to be human. They want to go off-road and get some mud on their wings. Believe it or not, incarnating is a privilege. It's really the only game in Universe Town. Duality getting to you? Can those tired of incarnating get off the boat between lives and say, I'm done. I'm sick of the blood, sweat, and tears, and I can't stand hearing the same songs on the radio over and over. Yes, a being can say that because every incarnation is a choice. But the hopeless feelings you have while in your body may be very different from the desires of your higher self, whose spiritual panorama provides a broader perspective. Close to the daily grind, you see sharp shards of reality. Standing back, your higher self sees a beautiful tiled mosaic. You can't see the mosaic for the shards? You could be sitting in the trans life waiting room, about to shoot down into your mother's uterus, when you get the pre-life jitters. You say to your guides, "Wow, that was tough last time." They say, "You're gonna be walloped again, but you're a strong spirit, and this is what you need to evolve." You respond, "What an honor. I get another life filled with unabated deprivation and malice, providing me yet again an abundance of opportunities to experience personal growth. Oh, goody." Look, if you figure out how to remember past lives, you'll remember some wonderful lives, too. You arrange many of your important life experiences, some in collaboration with other spirits, before you were born. You might plan with your spirit pal, "In 2021, let's meet in Bible study class, get married, and become parents to our other buddies, Spirit Matt and Spirit Joe. I know. We'll name them Meshezalel and Jehoshaphat. Poor kids." Or you might say, "As a child, I will suffer an illness that leaves me blind and deaf, but I'll use those resolute challenges to become a powerful leader and help others, and turn out to be Helen Keller." Or you become blind and deaf and turn bitter as some kind of karmic lesson. Better or bitter, either way, while you may not be aware of it until you remember your past lives, you chose it. One may incarnate quickly or have downtime between lives. A soul who has had a very rough life may want to spend some chill out in paradise before coming back. There's nothing like frolicking topless in the Elysian fields for an eternity or two to soothe an aching lower self. Souls yearn to evolve and grow. Since growth is something not easily accomplished in the comforts of heaven, they enroll in this earthly reformatory to work out their individuality muscles and build faith. The goal of the incarnational cycle is that over eons, your lower self, you, will demonstrate on earth the consciousness of heaven. It's the ultimate test of faith to be locked in a place of pain and conflict and still represent the highest of values. Theoretically, one could skip all of karma's smackdowns if one immediately embodied absolute compassion for all beings. It's worth a try. Nearing the end of the soul's transmigration through the material realm, when all the lessons of compassion have been learned, one becomes a spiritual master who incarnates solely to alleviate the suffering of others. These advanced souls who have gained profound wisdom through countless lives are known as bodhisattvas. Bodhisattvas are so high off of caring for others. Yes, caring for others will get you high. That they experience life on earth literally as life in heaven. To them, the veil is lifted, right here in this world, they have returned to Source. All is one.
I got the key to the kingdom, and the devil can't do me no harm. I got the key to the kingdom. I used to have a real good mother and a father, and they certainly stood the test. Now that I'm in bright glory, and I know they sold her at rest. They laid a good example for me. They taught me how to pray. Now I'm truly converted, and I'm walking in the narrow way. I'm so glad salvation is free. It is free for you and me. Now if we just only live with Jesus, how happy we could be. Love me no how, and it is on the count of sin. But I'm so thank God he's able for to give me many friends. You to love one another as he ever loved you, then you will rightly treat your neighbor, and it won't be hard for you to do. Every man don't understand the Bible like, but that's all now. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. Well, denominations has no right to fight. They ought to just treat each other right. And that's all. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. The primitive Baptists, they believe you can't get to heaven unless you wash your feet. But that's all now. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. The only primitive that has any part is the one that's after washing with a peeling heart. And that's all now. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. Now the missionary Baptists, they believe, go under the water and not to wash his feet. And that's all. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. Now the ME Methodists, they believe, sprinkle the head to not to wash the feet, and that's all now. I'll tell you my soul. But you better have Jesus. I'll tell you my soul. Now the enemy Methodists, they believe, sprinkle their heads not to wash the feet in their soul. I'll tell you my soul. But you better have Jesus now. I'll tell you my soul. Now the African Methodists, they believe the same, cause the new denomination ain't a thing but a name, and that's all now. I tell you not all, but you better have Jesus now. I tell you not all. Now the holiness people, when they came in, they said, boys, we can make it by living above sin, but that's all. I tell you not all, but you better have Jesus now. I tell you not all. Now the church of God has it in the mind that they can get to heaven without the sacrament wine, but that's all now. I tell you not all, but you better have Jesus now. I tell you not all. The subject of this lecture is that God, the Solomon says, train the child in the way that she should go, and when he gets old, he will not depart from it. Lots of people in the world, of course you cannot blame them. God have given them children, and they don't know what to train them. When you educate an untrained child that's brought up full of sin, it's just only got sense enough to forge notes and go to the pen. Let us train our children and try to keep down so much sin, cause it'll be too late to cry when you see them going to the pen. Lots of those little womanish girls that think themselves to be grand, they will stand on the corners at night making dates with a married man. Those little mannish boys with the hat setting on one strand of hair will go marry some woman's nice little girl and ain't got nowhere to carry her. Education is all right. I will tell you before you start. Before you educate the head, try to educate the heart.
We are coming to the end of a show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. I gave an extended talk on reincarnation. I hope you found that illuminating. And we heard music from Washington Phillips before the talk, Mother's Last Word to Her Son. Then after the talk, I Had a Good Father and Mother, Domination Blues, and Train Your Child, with that beautiful poem in his own voice. Thank you so much for listening. Mystic Pete out.